Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. If you're listening live, or if you're listening to the podcast, good whatever time of day it is. This is John Johnson on Radio Edge Talk. I've got, as usual, and partner David Noble, and Dalgetty Bay and Fife on a mobile tonight, so we'll maybe have slightly more shaky than usual quality. We're also really lucky to have David Lakin, am I saying that right, David?
Lakin,
okay. Sorry. David Lakin, who is from Engineering in Motion, who do work with Formula One and 4x4 STEM work in schools. So this is not something that I think either David or I are experts in, but we've had a look around the website and it looks really fascinating. David, could you maybe give us a wee bit, before you sort of we'll get into the main meat of it, could you maybe give us a wee bit of background information about yourself and how you got involved in the Formula One stuff?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Well, my background is in engineering. I used to be a production engineer at Caterpillar many years ago now, and studied engineering at university. It was through an open day that we had at Caterpillar, where we invited in local schools to come and see around the facilities, and I got asked to take a group of students around and show them my job and all the things I did on a day-to-day basis, and found it really rewarding that I was actually changing the perception of some of those students. You know, that they all had the very old and outdated perception of that engineering is a smelly, dirty factory job. By the end of the day, that had changed, and they saw that it is far from it. And I got a real buzz out of that. You know, being able to influence students' decisions and then for some of them to turn around and say, this is what I want to do when I grow up, was very rewarding. I then moved down to London to work with the Royal Academy of Engineers on a pilot project, which was called the London Engineering Project, where we worked with hard-to-reach schools to try and encourage them to take up STEM subjects. STEM, we mean science, technology, engineering, and maths, and just open their eyes to the world of STEM and engineering and science by doing fun hands-on activities. That was a very, very successful project that then sort of has been rolled out nationally. At the end of the pilot, I then moved on to work for Engineering in Motion, which is a non-for-profit organisation that runs a number of STEM initiatives all based around the world of automotive and motorsport, which is what we're obviously going to talk about later today. So my background is from the world of engineering, now sort of in education, trying to encourage and promote students to go forward into higher education in around STEM subjects, and then hopefully into a career in engineering or science.
Brilliant. So you actually get interested in education almost by chance. You started doing
Absolutely. As I say, back when I was working for Caterpillar, we had an open day for a local school to come in, and I was asked to show a group of students around. And at the end of the day, we asked them to present back to us kind of what they'd learned and understood, and the perception from what they started the day off with to what it was at the end of the day had totally changed, from thinking it was a smelly, dirty job and far from what they wanted to do, to thinking it was really good, really cool, and wanting to pursue that themselves. So I personally found that very rewarding, and then sort of had a taste for it, thinking that if I could sort of influence other people and open their eyes to what's available and what's out there, then that would be fantastic. And as I say, I was lucky enough to get a position at the Royal Academy of Engineers, working on a a very significant project at the time and a very new groundbreaking project of trying to work with hard-to-reach schools to actively encourage them to students to get into science and engineering and give them opportunities that they probably wouldn't ordinarily get within the school.
And do you see, I mean, not yourself, but sort of the engineering industry, is there a sort of perception in there that there is a lack of students coming forward into engineering?
Yes, very, very much so. And sadly, at the moment, there does seem to be a very disjointed view of what industry actually wants from students to what education is actually producing at the moment. It's only more recently that industry and education are starting to forge a connection and a link for industry to say, you know, we require students that come in out of education and asking for jobs to have X, Y, Z for them to get a job with that company. And that it's now starting to filter down from industry into education. Which is why we are starting to see changes in the curriculum and changes to out of school initiatives to be able to provide that for students to experience and for skills, for them to develop skills that means that when they finish their education and they do go for jobs in industry, that they've been exposed to it and have the right skills that the industry is looking for, and I think that is a big step forward.
And do you think there's been a big shift in what industry is looking for over the last, say, 10 or 20 years in engineering particularly? Do you think they're looking for a different kind of student than they did 20 years ago?
Yes, very much so. I mean, as technology advances, as the world becomes more computer-based and companies are looking for those kind of skills of computer programming and coding and being able to live in a modern digital world where 20, 30 years ago it was very much more mechanical and hands-on. Obviously, we certainly still need those kind of skills and those are some very, very important skills that we, as a country, we can't afford to lose for the workforce, but companies in engineering, in particular the very advanced and top-end engineering in Formula One and automotive like Jaguar Land Rover, are looking for very talented individuals that do have skills in programming and coding and using computer-aided design tools and so on, because that is just the natural progression of the way things have gone with the advancement of technology.
So do engineers generally sort of welcome there's a sort of move in education, I think internationally, to get kids to code at least, or to at least understand something of the processes of coding?
Yes, very, very much so, because if students are arriving on the apprenticeships or graduation schemes into an organisation and then they have to go through a learning curve of being brought up to speed of how that company operates or how that business operates, that's obviously time-consuming and could be costly. But students that are arriving at their door already with those skills and very advanced skills at that, that you know, what we see students doing as part of their competitions is right up there already with apprentices and graduates level. That means that when they arrive at the company, they can hit the ground running.
Well, right. And I mean, do you think that is it more knowledge or attitude, or you know, that you're looking for?
Well, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, obviously, you want the knowledge base. Companies do want students and individuals with the knowledge set that they've developed. But obviously, they have to have the right attitude to go with it. You know, and the students that we see taking part in our competition, where the aim is that they progress on into careers in engineering and science and technology, certainly have that attitude because they're already prepared to go that extra mile and put in the long hours and hard work to make sure that it pays off at the end. So it is a little bit of both, but thankfully it certainly is what we're already seeing, which is very encouraging.
Great.
David, it's David Noble here, and listeners will be looking forward to hearing about the F1 in schools and the 4x4 challenge programme. So yeah. I'm just wondering about this point, if you just want to start off with F1 in schools. I mean, although, as John said at the top of the programme, it's not really my area, but I'm really looking forward to hearing about it. In light, I think, of your first email to me, which said that you'd just returned from the world final in the States.
Yes, that's right. Well, if you like, we can start with F1 in schools. Basically, Engineering in Motion is a non-for-profit organisation that solely relies on sponsorship from companies and institutes to survive. Thankfully, the sponsors and the supporters that we have on board all recognise the need for developing students at such an early age. And developing their skills to encourage them to move on, as we've just been discussing. One of the competitions that Engineering in Motion runs is their F1 in Schools Technology Challenge. So it's a STEM initiative that's based around the world of Formula One, and that's done for two reasons. One, that we can. We have a fantastic project that students can engage in, but also we're using the glamour and the hook of Formula One to attract them to it. Teams of students aged 11 to 19 working in a team of between 3 and 6, so a minimum of 3 students and a maximum of 6, of either all girls or all boys or even mixed gender teams. We'll work over a number of weeks and months to design and manufacture their own miniature F1 car. So essentially what these teams are doing is creating and forming their own F1 team. Within that team, each of the students have their own job role. So there is literally a design engineer, a manufacturing engineer, a resource manager, and of course a team leader. So this is done deliberately to play on the strengths and weaknesses of the students within the group. So if somebody is naturally more into the hands-on mechanical side of it, then they could be the manufacturing engineer. If somebody is more interested in the design side, then obviously they could be the design engineer. But it also means that if a teacher has within that group students that aren't particularly interested in the science and engineering, which is fine, but they are more interested in the project management side of it or the sponsorship and marketing, it means that there's a job role for them within the team. 9 times out of 10, the team leader within the group is that team leader because they are interested in becoming a manager someday. And they may not have the skill set to be able to design and manufacture a car, but they certainly have the skills to be able to make sure that their colleague is doing that. And the idea is that, obviously, as we know, when you get into industry and you're working as part of a team, you all need to communicate, you need to have set deadlines and timeframes and work together, all doing your own individual job, but ultimately all working together as part of a team. So we are working on those key life skills within the group. So the students then follow sort of six stages, six processes that have been designed by us to deliberately mimic what happens in industry and what happens in Formula One teams and companies such as Jaguar Land Rover. It starts off with a business plan. So the students will sit down together and they will decide a timing plan of when things are going to get done by, who's doing what, Team Logo, Team Colours, Team Identity, and set out their business plan for the project. So, you know, this happens in industry, this happens already out there. The students will then use CAD software to design the car, so a computer-based software to do that. We're very lucky that we are partnered with Autodesk, and part of our partnership with them allows us to provide every student, teacher, and school free software, free Autodesk software to be able to design their car. By them taking part in the competition, they can register with Autodesk and then download a number of different softwares to take part in the competition. The software that's available for them to download, if they wish, and downloaded everything that's available to them, it actually totals somewhere in the region of £55,000 worth of free software for every single student, teacher, and school that's involved. So that's obviously very attractive for schools. So they'll use that software to design the car. And then once they're happy with it, they can then use the software to do some data analysis. So they can put the car through virtual wind tunnel testing. They can do some fluid dynamic testing, and they can see the stress points on the car and so on, which will then prompt them to go back to their original design and tweak it and change it until they're absolutely happy with it. Once they are happy with it, that software then generates a computer program which allows it to be plugged into a Denford router, a CNC machine, where the cars are then manufactured out of a solid block of balsa wood. So the cars that they're actually making are roughly a house brick size and machined out of a solid block of balsa wood to the design that they've created. Once that car has been manufactured, they then add on their wheels, add on their bearings, paint it up, add on all their logos and stickers and so on, so it's actually looking like a finished car. Now, if the school doesn't have the equipment to be able to manufacture the car, we have a number of manufacturing centres that are scattered around the country where the school can go along to and see their car being manufactured. We engage and link in with a lot of universities and colleges around the country, because for some of the students at school, that is their natural progression onto those colleges and universities. So it's forging the link straight away between the school and the college or university. We also have teams, depending on how well they develop, start working with external organisations to have features and parts of their car that are industry made. We have teams that work with paint specialists to have their car painted with drag resistant paint. We have teams working with bearing manufacturers to have special bearings made just for their car, and they have teams working with external companies to tweak their designs and so on. So teams really do take it to that next level of manufacturing. The next step is for them to test their car. So they'll put their car into a miniature wind tunnel or a smoke machine to get some data, and then test it on a track, or test it in some other innovative way that they've come up with. And then the final step is the fun part, where they come along and actually compete and race against other teams that have developed their cars. So the race involves a 25-meter racetrack that's 20 metres in between the start and finish gate. We put into the back of their car a little compressed air cartridge, and we have a starting mechanism where with a set of five lights, just like the real Formula One lights, where the lights come on one at a time, and then when they all go out, the driver presses a trigger. So we measure their reaction speed to them going to reacting to the lights going out, and it, on our starting pod, it basically sends a small needle into the back of the compressed air cartridge, pieces of the cartridge, and then the compressed air escapes and the car fires down the track. The F1 cars will go down the track at just over 1 second. At the moment, the world record stands at 1.02 seconds in between over 20 metres. So these cars are extremely fast. And obviously, depending on how well they've designed it, manufactured it, their aerodynamics, their wheels, their bearings, and so on, there's so many different factors. Depends how fast their car goes. But also, on the day of the event, the regional final, they're also judged on a number of other parts of the competition. So each team has to produce a verbal presentation, a 5-minute verbal presentation in front of a panel of judges, where the team will stand up and present to them all about their team, who's done what went wrong, what didn't work, what they would change next time, just explain all about the car and the processes they've been through. So students are using tools such as PowerPoint or internet-based tools such as Prezi and things like this to give these presentations. So again, it's working on their presenting skills, on their core skills, and sort of developing their confidence in public speaking. The next thing they have to do is produce a portfolio. So they have a 20-page portfolio, which is basically their business plan, which covers everything about the team, all their design work, all their engineering drawings of the car, all their sponsorship that they brought in, and so on. They have a pit display where they decorate it up to add all the logos, the colour schemes, sketches, prototype models, and normally some cakes and sweets and things to bribe the judges with. And then the probably the most important part of the judging is engineering, where they'll sit down with a panel of judges and the judges will quiz them on their design, why they chose that design, why they chose that material, how they manufactured it, and so on, where we really do understand at that point how much work that the students have done on it and what they understand about the process, where we find out the grey area of how much work the students have done and how much work the teachers have done. As I say, the other part is the fun part about racing, where we'll have a leaderboard of the fastest car down to the slowest car, with different points, obviously higher points allocated to the faster teams. We also scrutineer all the cars. We have to do this to number one, make sure that they are safe to race on the track. These cars are firing down a 20 metre track at just over a second, so we need to make sure that they're not going to suddenly fly off the track and hurt anybody. But more importantly, it's to make sure that they have read and understood the rules and regulations. Again, this is to mimic industry, where everybody has rules and procedures and regulations that they need to follow. So this is making sure that the students have done that and understand that. So we hold 10 regional finals around the country. We hold them during January and February. So a school will go along to their closest regional to compete. They'll get judged throughout the day on all those judging elements I've just discussed. And then the team with the highest amount of points at the end of the day will win through. We have other awards that the judges will nominate teams for the best engineered car or innovative thinking, or the judges' discretionary award, where it's awarded to a team that may not have scored enough points to win through, but have made big efforts and really deserve recognition for their hard work. We have awards for best sponsorship and marketing. Every team is encouraged to seek sponsorship, but we don't we don't really care whether it's a couple of pounds, thousands of pounds, or sponsorship in kind. It's more how have the team gone about seeking that sponsorship. You know, have they just spoken to the school to ask for some money? Have they approached mum and dad for some money? Or have they gone to a local company or even a big international company to seek sponsorship? And again, it can be sponsorship in kind. So they could go to a T-shirt printer and have their team T-shirts printed free of charge, but with the company website address displayed on it or something like that. So had they approached the company and offered them a gold, silver, bronze sponsorship structure, and for gold they have their logo plastered everywhere and can give them some feedback for the and some payback for the amount of sponsorship that the team get. So they're judged on this. So at the end of the regional, we have our overall winners who progress through then to the UK national final. For F1 in schools, we hold that UK national final at the Big Bang Fair, which is a huge STEM event that takes place in next year in March. It's taking place at the NEC because that's only, I think, one of two venues in the country that's now big enough to hold the event, where we will hold a UK national final and do the whole thing again, but obviously this time with regional winners, and then select their UK national champions. Those UK national champions then have the opportunity to progress through to the world finals. F1 in schools is an international competition. It's now in over 42 countries around the world, all doing exactly the same thing, working with their schools. Obviously, they may do things slightly different because of their country's education system, but ultimately they are holding regional events, national events, and then putting forward their national champions to go through to the world finals. And as you said, we've recently just come back from world finals for 2013 that we held out in Austin, Texas, to coincide with the Austin Grand Prix that's there, which was a fantastic event. The level that the students reach at world finals is unbelievable, with the work and what they're able to produce is absolutely breathtaking. We're lucky enough to be able to get the world of Formula One along to the event to see these teams and see the work that they've done. And then we're also lucky enough then to be able to take all the teams to the race and into the paddock and into the team garages for them to see what's actually happened. The whole name of the competition, F1 in schools, it does literally mean Formula One. We are very lucky to be supported by Formula One management and Mr. Bernie Ecclestone himself. He's been a supporter of the competition since around about 2005. And if anybody asks Bernie what he's doing for the future of Formula One, he points at us and says F1 in schools. And it's certainly working, because we have students that have taken part in the competition, progressed through to higher education, and then and they're working within Formula One teams, and we see them in and around the paddock. So the process is working, and I don't doubt for a second that one day we're going to actually have students that have taken part in the competition and been team principals in Formula One teams. So it's very encouraging, and it's fantastic to have.
It's absolutely fascinating listening to you. I mean, John will want to come in a minute, no doubt. I should just say at the top of the show that if we're just coming into the last few minutes of the show, right enough, but if anybody has got a quick question or comment for David, then we've got the email on Twitter. Options, you can email edutalker, that's edutalker@hotmail.co.uk, or if you pop something up on Twitter, include the hashtag edutalk, edutalk. As I say, I'm sure John will come in. Just a couple of quick questions from me, David. I'm just interested if you can just say briefly about how you see schools actually managing the programme then. Was it lunch clubs or what else have you seen that's actually embedded in the curriculum? And also, you know, did you actually find the higher education institutions getting involved in individual schools' attempts, you know, as they're operating?
Yeah, sure. Well, the project is run obviously within school. Although the competition is called F1 in schools, it doesn't necessarily have to be an in school. It can be an out of school initiative, you know, Cubs, Girl Guides, Cadets, and so on. But But 9 times out of 10, it's run within the school. It's normally run as an after-school club, a part of a science and engineering club or a lunchtime club. But we do have the project mapped against the national curriculum, which means that teachers can deliver it as part of the national curriculum, part of the classroom activity, by taking part in it, their coursework and their project work does go towards GCSEs and A-levels and engineering diplomas and so on. So it's really up to the school and the teacher on how they want to deliver it. But 9 times out of 10, it is an after-school club. It is a group of students that meet regularly, once or twice a week, either after school or at lunchtime, and we'll work on the project over a number of weeks and a number of months. What tends to happen is once the team has been established and start working on it, they'll spend every lunchtime every little bit of time that they can working on their project, working on the different aspects of the competition and trying to develop the best car and the best image and team profile they can for the competition. So that's generally how it runs. But as I say, we do have curriculum material available if teachers want to actually deliver it within the classroom and part of the classroom activity.
David, it's John Johnson here. I'm just... sounded a fantastic project, just wonderful in all sorts of aspects. There's a couple of things. When you were talking at first, you were talking about hard to reach schools.
Yeah.
And I wonder, are you finding that children maybe from less advantaged backgrounds can come into the programme and make progress?
Yeah, very much so. And that is some of the most rewarding part of running this competition is that we work with schools across the country, from deprived areas and hard-to-reach schools right the way through to private schools. And every student has exactly the same opportunity to be able to compete. It's very, very rewarding to see students that come from deprived backgrounds and areas taking part in the competition and gaining so much from being involved. Both on developing their own personal skills, their confidence levels, their actual academic ability, because at the end of the day, this is about developing those skills, and they are learning science and engineering and math skills without them realising sometimes because they're doing a fun hands-on activity. And then they also get the opportunity to do things that they may not ordinarily be able to do. You know, they get a We hold a lot of our regional events at universities, so for some of them, it's they may not get an opportunity to visit a university to see what it's like, but by taking part, they come along to that and see it, and then hopefully gives them that encouragement to be able to get there one day. And also, you know, some of the rewards and the prizes that we have with Club for Winners. We take teams along to Grand Prix and take them in the paddock and they meet some of the Formula One teams and we take them along to companies such as Jaguar Land Rover. So, you know, again, it's opening their eyes and showing them things that they probably wouldn't normally get the chance to do by taking part.
The other thing that struck me as you were talking was that the seriousness... you know, the materials, each, when you started off saying balsa wood, but then we drop into, you know, wind-resistant paint and special bearings for wheels and all this sort of thing. And I get the feeling that if I was a child and somebody was taking me as seriously as that, that would become a great driver. It's not...
Yeah.
I'm a primary school teacher by background and, you know, I've done plenty of times made wee cars and race them in the gym hall, but this is really sort of upping the seriousness of the whole thing an awful lot, and I imagine that would be a fantastic driver for kids to get involved with you.
Yeah, very, very much so. I mean, Formula One engineering is out there, been the pinnacle of engineering in automotive engineering, and this is what we're trying to do as well. I mean, when it gets to world final level, teams really do push the boundaries and are doing things that companies are doing or in some cases not even doing yet. But obviously, it all has to start somewhere, and we have schools taking part for the first time that will design and manufacture a basic car and take it from there. It's obviously a learning curve for teams. I mean, all of our national champions and world champions didn't do that in their first year, in their first rookie year. They've been competing for a couple of years and have been getting better and better. Every time they come along to an event and they see other teams and they see an idea that they've come up with that they pinch and develop and then work on. So every year teams get better and better, but obviously they all have to start somewhere. So even if a school does see a team working with bearing manufacturers and paint specialists and so on, shouldn't be put off, because obviously they've been involved for a long time and they will reach that level one day as well. We actively encourage new schools and new teams to get involved all the time. We at regional level, we always the best rookie team to go through to the national final. So, and this is done deliberately, that we don't want new schools and new teams turning up to an event, a regional final, seeing a school that competes every year and does well every year and thinking, oh, what's the point? We're not going to win anyway. So by having the rookie class and awarding the best rookie team, it means that everybody's on a level playing field. And then it means that we have rookie teams progressing through to the national final. So that's done deliberately. And we also encourage any schools and teachers and even groups of students that are thinking about taking part in the competition to come along to one of our regionals and see the event in action. Although what I've sort of described this evening, the best way to understand the competition is to actually see it in action. Mm-hmm. And to walk around and talk to the other students, talk to the teachers, see how they've got involved and what they've done and all the good practice and so on. And then go away back to school and work on those. And then if they keep competing and come back with a stronger team each year, then eventually they are going to be reaching the point where they could become national champions and world champions.
Brilliant. Yeah, that just sounds great. And if people were wanting to get involved, they would basically just head over to engineeringinmotion.co.uk and there's plenty of information about the competition there, enough to get for people to get a start.
Yeah, absolutely. If they head on to the website, if they go to engineeringinmotion.co.uk, you'll see all the initiatives that we've run, and obviously just click on whichever one they're interested in, and that will take you directly to the website. So for F1, it's f1inschools.co.uk, and that's the best port of information for anybody that wants to get involved. It's got different sections for whether you're a student, a teacher, a parent even, or even a sponsor that wants to get involved. And gives all the information about what it means to be involved, what you gain from it, and so on. The rules and regulations and the challenge handbooks are on there to download, and it just provides hopefully everything that's needed. But the contact us if there's things on there that you'd like more information on or don't quite understand. The contact us is basically me and my colleagues. Who will obviously be able to answer any questions that you do have. So it's the same with the other competition that we've run, which is the Land Rover 4x4 in schools competition. It works in exactly the same way as F1 in terms of the verbal presentation, portfolio and engineering judging. But the difference is teams are designing and manufacturing a miniature remote control four-wheel drive car rather than an F1 car. And then teams drive that car around an off-road course that has everything from hills, rock crawls, water dips, tunnels, and so on, everything that that Land Rover test their full-scale vehicles on. So 4x4 is a lot more mechanical and electrical and hands-on compared to F1, which is a bit more design-based. But the actual competition itself, in terms of what happens on the day and regional finals going forward to national finals, is exactly the same. With the Land Rover 4x4, we're very lucky that we've got such great support from Jaguar Land Rover, where we actually can pair up every team that takes part in the competition with a Jaguar Land Rover graduate, who will work with the team to mentor them and do some visits to the school to support them and give them some tips and hints on how they should be doing it. Obviously, these graduates are sort of early 20s, so they're very close to the student age, so they act as very positive role models for the students by getting involved. We also have a tooling company called WNT that sponsor the competition. So they have technical engineers that are scattered around the country that we pair up with the teams, who can then offer technical support and advice on how to have things manufactured, any tooling that they need to machine components and so on, and be able to offer that technical experience to again develop and encourage their students. And so they're working with industry, they're working with mentors to support and hopefully learn from, which will give them a lot of advantage in the competition.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like an incredibly well organised and run competition, the whole organisation. How many people are involved on your end in the actual setup?
Well, we're actually a very, very small team. We're actually just a team of four that run this competition. So what we actually do for such a small team is quite incredible. But we all love what we do, and we all get a lot of reward for doing it. It's insane what changing student perceptions and seeing these students develop. Some students we see year on year out when they're coming back, and we've watched them sort of grow up and develop, and now hear that they've moved on to work for Jaguar Land Rover or work in Formula One. So it is very rewarding. But we are actually only a very small team that do this. So, but as I say, it's worth it in the end.
Mm. Well, as I say, just looking through the website, it looks really professional, well organised. There are tons of fascinating offshoots. And there's just mention of 3D printers and all sorts of different things I think people could get quite excited about. Are the leaders in school, say the teachers who would be involved, are they mostly coming from science subjects, or is it a range?
Yeah, I mean, 9 times out of 10, they are D&T teachers or science teachers and maths teachers because of it being a STEM initiative. We do get the oddball teacher that just has an interest in Formula One or has an interest in Land Rovers or remote control cars, and take it forward through just that passion. But we do recognise that teachers that drive this forward are key. It's very easy to try and to engage with the students to say, would you like to design your own Formula One car or create your own Formula One team or design a Land Rover car? That they'll get very excited and want to get involved. But ultimately, it's the teacher behind them that has to drive it forward and make sure that happens. Now, part of the competition is that the students that take part qualify for a number of different accreditation schemes, that they can get Crest Awards to a level silver, they can get industrial cadets through EDT, they can get Duke of Edinburgh Awards and quite a few award bodies. We're even just about to start working with City and Guilds to create a City and Girls certificate for students that are taking part. So the students, by taking part in the competition, can get a lot of accreditation for their own personal record of achievement. But something that we recognised sort of around about this time last year was the fact that behind them is the teachers. And apart from a pat on the back from us and a certificate that wouldn't really mean anything, and maybe a VIP trip to Silverstone for the Grand Prix or a Land Rover experience, the teachers don't get any reward or any recognition for all their hard work. So we formed a partnership with the College of Teachers, part of the Institute of Education, and developed a certificate of professional practice with them, which means that any teacher and technician, because we recognise that a lot of school technicians have a lot of input and a lot of involvement in the competitions and are, in many cases, the unsung heroes, that they can then gain this professional and recognised qualification that can go into their own personal portfolio of achievement, their own CV for developing their career as a teacher. So that is sort of a string to our bow now that we feel we're really excited about and really happy that we can actually offer something that's worthwhile for teachers being actually involved in the competition, to acknowledge all their hard work and all the hours and all the stress of actually entering the team into the competition. So we feel that that's a bit of recognition and a bit of reward.
Well, to tell you the truth, David, I mean, I have absolutely no interest at all in Formula One, and I think if I was still in classroom, I would just love to be involved in something like this, because it sounds just a fantastic project for motivating the students, for getting them interested in things that are really important. And you touched upon so many things, right, across from the hardcore engineering through design, advertising. There's just so much that ties in with that. And I say that's all in a very compressed amount of time that you've told us about this. Just, it sounds like a great project. As well as the website, you also tweet at underscore F1 in schools underscore, is that?
Yes, that's right. So we have the Facebook and Twitter accounts. For both F1 and 4x4 in school. So we certainly encourage everybody to like us, follow us, tweet us. Obviously, social media is getting bigger and bigger, and so we have websites and accounts where again they can keep. People can keep up to date with the latest news and announcements and things. So, yes, please do follow us. Just search for F1 in schools and 4x4 in schools.
Yeah, well, we'll add these URLs to the archive. And I'm very conscious that I think we said at the start we'd be half an hour, and we're now pushing the top of the hour. So I just really need to say, David, thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you for having me.
Really inspiring talk, and as I say, touched on so many interesting things and gave me a really good picture, so I hope people are listening and sort of inspired by that, because I think I've got a really good overview of the programme, and I'll certainly be talking to people that I know about it and see if they're interested. Say thank you very much, and just to anybody else that's listening, a quick what's coming up next. Tomorrow night, David and the Professional Learning for Teachers channel, we're talking to George Gilchrist, who's the head teacher in the Borders. We're not too sure what's happening next Wednesday. We're sure we'll be here talking to somebody, or David will be. And 18th of December, we'll be talking to Courtney McLeod, who's the founder of the Scottish Media Academy. And there's all sorts of more things you can read about on edutalk.cc/upcoming. We'll tell you what's coming on. So I just need to say a real big thank you again to David. We'll say a day or two the audio should be up on EduTalk, and we'll have links to all the different sites, which should be able to get people a really good overview. So, thank you very much, David, and to everybody that's listening, good night.